You're now listening to Upon Further Review on the official Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, what is up? Eddie Pascal and producer Trav back in the Beat Lab, finally. It's been a minute, but we are back at 1220 Harbor Bay Parkway, and man, it feels good to be home. We have a good episode today, very strong. Coming back with a vengeance, the great James Jones, former Raider, current NFL Network analyst, joins us, as well as the champion, the heavyweight champion of the world, Evander Holyfield. A memorable conversation with the champ, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But as you guys know, we've been on a bit of a tour of the South the past 2 weeks. First in Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl. Then in Atlanta all last week for the Super Bowl, along with spending Saturday with Coach Tom Flores as he waited to find out his Hall of Fame fate. As we know, Coach Flores was denied a spot in Canton, a spot he more than deserves. And after a few days to think about it, I have some thoughts. And as the great Aubrey Drake Graham would say, I'm upset. I'm not going to yell, scream, or tweet in all caps about my outrage of this injustice, because that's just not me and not very effective in my humble opinion. But what I'm going to do is lay out a case. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to lay out a case based on facts, reason, and what is so. And then I'll let you guys make the call. Okay, and before we get started, I have to get this out there. I'm not trying to shame anyone who actually got into the Hall of Fame this year. I have no hate in my heart for any of the 8 guys who got in, all very deserving, yada, yada, yada. Definitely worthy of their bust in Canton. But this isn't about them. This is about showing that once again, the Hall of Fame committee got it wrong. Again. They got it wrong again. In my opinion, you play football, or any sport for that matter, really. You play sports to win. As a wise man once said, you play to win the game. And shocker, I place a pretty heavy emphasis on rings. On rings, on rings, on rings. Tom Flores has 4 of them. You know who else has 4 rings that just got inducted into the Hall of Fame class? Do you? Any thoughts? Bueller? Anyone? The answer is none of them. Does Champ Bailey have 4 rings? He doesn't. Does Pat Bowlen have 4 rings? No. Gil Brandt? No. Tony Gonzalez? No. Ty Law? Nope. Kevin Mawai, who was actually drafted by Coach Flores, he didn't have 4 rings. He doesn't have 1 ring. Ed Reed? No. And then Johnny Robinson, who's a senior committee guy, but he also, for the sake of this argument, he doesn't have 4 rings either. Let's talk about winning percentage. Let's do that. Let's talk about winning percentage. Coach had a 610 career winning percentage. That's a better clip than Bill Walsh, Tom Landry, and the legendary Chuck Knoll. All 3 of those guys, they have bust in Canton, but nothing for Coach. Oh, but Eddie, regular season wins are cool. How about the postseason? That's really where you can tell who is a man amongst boys, who is a giant amongst mere mortals. You know what? I'm glad you asked. In the postseason, Coach had a 727. Let me bring that one back. A 727 winning percentage, which is a mark bested by one man in the history of football. That man is Vince Lombardi. So in case you didn't miss it, you missed it the last time around, 727 career postseason winning percentage, which is the second best in the history of football behind Vince Lombardi, the man who the Super Bowl trophy is named after. Coach Flores was the first person to win a Super Bowl as a player, as an assistant coach, and a head coach. The first guy to hit that triumvirate. He coached 10 players who ended up with Buss and Canton. And as I said just a second ago, he drafted Kevin Mawai, who went into this year's Hall of Fame class. And yet, we haven't even touched on what Coach did as a pioneer for the game. He was the first Latino quarterback in pro football history. He was the first minority in pro football to win a Super Bowl. He was the first Latino president and general manager. Come on. Come on. There's no Jim Plunkett without Tom Flores, one of our favorite guys. There is no Plunk without Coach Flores. You know, there's probably not even a Tony Gonzalez without Coach Flores. And that has to count for something. That absolutely has to. You unequivocally cannot tell the story of pro football without Coach Tom Flores. And that, along with winning, because as you know, it's all about rings, should be the ultimate measure of whether someone is worthy of a spot in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And plain and simple, yet again, the Hall of Fame messed up. They got it wrong again. They've gotten it wrong year after year after year after year. And 2019 was no exception to that rule. They got it wrong. They got it wrong. What a day. What a day. Well, I appreciate everyone listening to my tangent. We usually keep it fun and lighthearted here on this very serious podcast. And the rest of the episode will be fun and lighthearted. We'll welcome the great Kyle Martin Media back from his week hiatus. And, you know, we'll get back to our usual fun and shenanigans. But that bummed me out. So I've been sitting on this for, oh, man, almost a week now. Almost a week I've been letting this fester. I've been pondering this, and it bums me out. So I had to share with you guys, like, it's just not right, and no good. In all seriousness, though, we have to give a huge shout-out to Coach and his wife, Barbara, for letting us be in the room on Saturday afternoon. It was me, it was producer Trav, and producer Marcus, and literally just Coach and his wife, and they really didn't need to let us in that room to spend the afternoon with them. We totally would have understood if they said, hey, it's a pretty, you know, private, personal moment for us and our family. Wanted to just be us. But they did just the opposite. They welcomed us with open arms as they waited for that knock on the door, or unfortunately, in this case, the phone call on the cellular device. And they were really good to us, letting us invade their space. And while obviously we wish the result was a lot different, we had a really nice time with them, so we'd be remiss not to thank them for letting us hang on this. And before we get back to the rest of the show, let me end on this. The voters got it wrong this year, as you know, yet again. And you better believe that's exactly what they did. They certainly did get it wrong. But that said, we will not stop this fight, will we, producer Trav? We will not stop this fight. And hopefully someday soon, sooner than later, logic will prevail. And Coach will get into the Hall of Fame where he rightfully deserves. But unfortunately, this is not that year. So we move on. Bummed out, disappointed, but more convinced than ever that Coach Tom Flores is a Hall of Famer. But we soldier on, and we bring in... it's really not a great segue to this, so let's just bring him in. Former Raider, one of our favorite guys. You see him on NFL Network now, wearing some really fancy suits, looking good, looking strong. Like I said, a local dude, a guy who we've known for quite some time and is always good enough to give us a couple minutes, the great James Jones. James, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm just hanging, man, walking around here, man, talking to all these radio stations, man, talking this game, man. So just getting ready, man.
I got to ask you a question, completely un-Super Bowl related.
Yeah.
Do you have any beef with the guys who jack your hoodie look? I remember in 2014, you were at the forefront of that movement, the hoodie underneath the underneath the jersey. But now you look and there's like a half dozen guys out there doing it.
No, man, you know, it actually makes me proud, man, because I was the first guy to actually do it in the game and wear it in the game. So when I see these dudes in the game with the hoodie, or I see them at Pro Bowl with the hoodie and all that, I mean, sometimes I'll tweet out at them like, man, I see your swag, you know what I'm saying, you know. So I like it, man. I mean, I started a little trend, you know, so I like it, you know. I wish they would give me a little shout out, though.
I was going to say, I assume they come and they kiss the ring a little bit, right?
You know what I'm saying? No, ain't none of them gave me a shout out like, goodness. You know, JJ. You know, hey, got this one for you right here, swagged out. But you know, I still appreciate them putting the hoodie on under there, though.
Speaking of style, I'm not here to start beef or anything like that. But we talked to Nate Burleson yesterday, and I said, Nate, is there anyone? And it was a loaded question. I said, Nate, is there anyone at the network who dresses better than you?
Yeah.
Thinking in my head, he's got to say James Jones. At least if he doesn't dress better than me, he's in my league. Mm-hmm. He said nothing, bro. He said, no, there's no one even close.
Ooh.
I know.
You know what? You know, and even every time I see Nate, he say, ooh, dude, you sweet, too. You killing him.
What's he got to put on for the cameras?
I know that, you know, in the back of his mind, he was thinking like, you know, James Jones be dressing. But, you know, everybody think they the most swagged out. So you ain't going to get nobody no credit like that. And, yeah, it's like with football players still, man. You're a competitor. So you ain't never on the football field going to say somebody better than you. Well, you know, so I can see him saying, hey, ain't nobody got swag like me. That's all good.
I'll say in the maroon, this is my color for next year. I've already put it out there. 2019, this is my color.
I'm telling you, man.
I'm bringing it out.
Swag out, man. That's how you do it. Yes, sir. You know, I'm always going to come with it.
That's right. So one of your NFL Network guys, a little Raiders talk here, one of your NFL Network guys, Mike Mayock, now the GM of the Silver and Black.
Yes.
In terms of Italian evaluator, a guy who knows the game, I mean, what are we really getting in, Mike?
I mean, you're getting a guy, number one, that's going to work extremely hard. I've seen him in that building, man, numerous times, man, just hours and hours and hours breaking people down, breaking down players. So you definitely getting a guy who knows what he is talking about. The only thing that scares me is Gruden going to listen?
Mm.
You know, are you going to get out your ways? I mean, you hired him. Are you going to listen to what he has to say, even if it might not be a player you want? But he's been breaking down for so long and knows that this player is a good player for the Oakland Raiders. Are you going to listen to him and not just say, no, this is who we're taking? So I hope Gruden listens to him because he knows what he's talking about. I mean, three first-round picks. I mean, I know he has to be licking at his chops at getting those picks in. So, you know, I just hope Gruden listens to him, man, and understands that this is what he does for a living.
You know, we talked to Mike last week in Mobile when we were down at the Senior Bowl, and he said that the one thing that he's really stressed in the first, call it a month, that he's been on the job is the transparency and the open lines of communication between the scouting department and the coaching staff.
Yeah.
And as a guy who's been in a bunch of buildings, who's been in the league as long as you were, who's seen as much as you have, Do you really kind of see that as an important thing, too, for those two sides of the building to really kind of be in lockstep?
No question. I think that's the biggest thing, man. I think when you go in buildings and different organizations, you see, like, the scouting department will say, we thought he was okay. The coach could be like, oh, man, we thought he was the best player on the board. And then the other guys be like, man, this is a second rounder. So, you know, let's all get on the same page. Everybody be on board. Okay, what do you think about him? Do you think he's a first rounder? Do you think he's a second rounder? I think he's a first. I think he's a first. I think he's a second or whatever. But everybody needs to be on the same page. So when you bring these guys in, we're all on board to make sure he succeeds as well. You don't want to bring a guy in where you're like, oh, shoot, I didn't even want him. You know what I mean? I had him on my board in the second round. So it's good that everybody involved in scouting and bringing players in are on the same page when you're drafting guys, especially in the first round. But you want it all the way through all the rounds.
I mean, that's something that's crazy to me, too, and I think that it's kind of lost on some people. You got to realize there's 53 guys on a football team, right? It's not baseball, basketball, something like that. There's 53 guys. And picking these guys, regardless of the sport, is still such an inexact science.
Yeah.
And there's so many guys with so many different opinions. I mean, it's – if you think about it, really getting a draft, going through a draft from the first round to the seventh, I mean, it's a minor miracle that you can pull it off on time.
No question. And like I say, the draft, man, it's hit or miss.
Yeah.
I mean, you can break down these guys as much as you want. They could come in there and they could be bust. You can get a guy in the seventh round, he could come in there, he could be an all-pro, Pro Bowl player, you know. So, I mean, it's hit or miss, but you want to do as much homework you possibly can on the players to possibly make sure that it's a hit. And you want everybody to be on board. If you have a certain opinion about a player, who cares what we're going to think? And I think that's what Mike Mayock's saying. Like, okay, Gruden, I think he's a first-rounder. You might think he's a second-rounder. But let's talk, because it might be another guy out there that we both agree is a first-rounder, and we'll take him. And you want that kind of communication.
Communication makes the world go around. I got to ask you about your guy, DC. So, Derek, I mean, it's crazy to think about since you were with him. I mean, it seems like year after year he's just got a new offensive coordinator, a new position coach, a new head coach. But now, finally, a lot of consistency for Derek. You know, Gruden signs the long-term deal. And now Derek going into his second year with Gruden and Ole and those guys. I mean, as a quarterback, how beneficial is it to have that kind of consistency?
Oh, man, that's huge, man. That is huge to go into an offseason, not have to learn no new offense, no new verbiage, no new signals, none of that. You just come out there and you play all the things you did last year. You maybe put a little wrinkle here and there, but you get better. But when you got to come in every year and learn the offense, learn new terminology, and then you got a different offensive coordinator calling the plays like, oh, man, we didn't do this last year on third down. I like this on third down last year. Now we're doing something totally different. So to come in, have some consistency, you know Gruden going to be calling the plays. It's going to be the same offense. I think you'll see Derek take another jump and have a better year because him and Gruden will have a lot better chemistry of what they both like to do.
I mean, we talk about the quarterback so much, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the name of the game.
Oh, but yeah.
In terms of the other guys on that offense, the receivers, the linemen, all those guys, how beneficial is it going to be for them to have the same verbiage, all the same stuff going into 2019 too?
I'm telling you, people don't understand, man. Any position, you hate having to learn and pick up a playbook and come in there and learn new signals and new verbiage and all that. You just want to come in and you just want to play. I know the signals. I know the playbook. Yeah, we know we got to teach the rookies, but the vets on our team, we're coming in, we hitting the ground running, you know, and it's easier on coaches as well too when you don't got to put in a whole new playbook, because when you come in now we can move faster, we could take certain steps even faster. Like, okay, we might not put in third down second day in training camp, but they all know the offense. We on third down, we ahead of the game because our guys know the offense and know the playbook. But when you got to teach guys the playbook and the signals and all that, man, it kind of holds you back a little bit, you know, to be able to really get to the whole playbook. And then it holds you back a little bit from just getting the best out of your players, because you still got the normal stuff in that you have in your playbook and you haven't really even hit the difficult plays yet.
What do you think the most difficult offense was, the most complex one that you were asked to learn your time in the league?
It was probably the Raiders, probably Coach Oley.
Really?
Yeah, when I came from the Packers, being in the Packers same system for 7 years, that system was kind of easy to learn. So then when I came to Oley's offense, it was a little bit more on the wide receiver. You know, it was a lot more that we had to learn, you know, certain blitzes, you know, that we had to learn in his offense that changed your route and things like that. In Green Bay, they gave you a route. If Aaron didn't change it, that was the route you were running. So, you know, to come there and you're changing routes and stuff on your own by, you know, how the coverage is and how the blitzes are coming, it was a little different. But I caught on pretty fast, but it was harder to learn that one than it was Green Bay.
As a wide receiver, do you like that, though, to be able to have that freedom and to be like, all right, this is what I'm looking at?
Is it kind of like a delicate balance? Yeah, you do and you don't, because it's when you got to worry about getting off of Patrick Peterson from jamming you.
Yeah.
Then you gotta look out there at the coverage. Okay, if it's cover two, I do this. If it's cover three, I do this. If it's man-to-man, I do this. Oh, shoot, if they blitz, I got to do this. You know what I'm saying?
I get that,
you know,
for sure.
You know, that's a lot, you know, that you have to think about. Then, okay, look, I'm lining up. All right, I got an in route. Let's Aaron give me something else.
That is kind of nice. I mean, it doesn't hurt having Aaron Rodgers play the ball either.
And you play a lot faster. You're like, shoot, a break. I know my job, you know, and if he give me something else, boom, I'm going to know the signal, you know.
Easy.
I ain't got to worry about blitzes and all that. So, so it's good.
You've been a busy man recently, but I want to ask you, are you enjoying the podcast deal? You liking that?
I am, man.
Time?
Yeah, me and Fallon, we have a
That's
ball.
That's right, our old friend Fallon.
Yeah, man,
Fallon
me
Smith.
And Fallon, we have a ball, man. Fallon talks much more than me, you know, so the podcast go about 45 minutes. I mean, she'll take about 37 of them, but, you know, I'm good. I'm good with my little 5 minutes, and it's all good. But, no, I'm having a ball with it, man, just to get out there, share stories from high school and, you know, talk life and all that good stuff.
You got a good podcast voice, though, too. You know what I mean? You got that D.
I try, man.
I do you put – hey, do you drop it down an octave for the podcast?
I try to, because, you know, Fallon's so loud, so I try to even it out a little bit.
You know, we've had a lot of fun, too, doing the podcast thing for, like, the past year. And I think what's really cool about, like, the podcast space, as, like, nerdy as I used to say, it's just fun, like, to tell stories and stuff,
it is,
right?
It is, man, and that's about, what it's like, all about. And it's crazy just, like, you know, the people who listen to it, man, like, dang, I didn't even know that. You know, I listened to Keeping It 300. I didn't even know that you and Fallon did that or Fallon did that. So it's cool just to get outside the box. You ain't always talking football. They get to know you as a person and all that, man. So I like it.
No. James Jones, man, we appreciate your time. Always good to catch up with you. And
appreciate
hopefully we
it,
catch you in the Bay Area soon.
Yes, sir. I'll be down there, man, hitting the golf ball.
Yep. All right, bro. We'll catch up.
All right, man. Yes, sir.
And many, many countless blessings to our friend James Jones, who's good enough to give us a couple minutes. And just a bit of a programming note to let you behind the curtain a little bit. I'm sure you can tell, those of you who are listening carefully, that the audio from the James conversation sounds a little bit different than everything else we've done. Well, that's because we caught up with James last week at the Super Bowl. And speaking of, while we were at the Super Bowl, and I told you guys this last week, one of the best parts about the Super Bowl is you get people from all walks of sports, entertainment, celebrity chef, like literally everything. Like if you want to talk to people, if you said, hey, I got a, if you're a big baller and you want to talk, end up at the Super Bowl. Doesn't matter what walk of life you come from. And in the spirit of that, we caught up with, and this was a treat. This was actually really fun for me. We caught up with Evander Holyfield. Yes, the Evander Holyfield, the man perhaps most famously for being an appetizer for one Mike Tyson, but one heck of a fighter. The champ was good enough to give us a few minutes. We talked about a ton of stuff. We talked about, what did we talk about? We talked about Vegas. We talked about kind of the regimen of a fighter. We talked a little Rocky, which was a real treat for me. Because Rocky's like on my top five films, I would say. It's Top Gun number one. And then 2, 3 is probably up. Yeah, I would say top five. Top five's fair. But we did a lot of stuff with Evander. It was great. So without any further ado, here it is, ladies and gentlemen, Evander Holyfield. And I am very excited and truthfully a little bit nervous. Like on a scale of 1 to 10, like a 2.5 on the nervous scale. Because the champ is here, the real deal, Evander Holyfield. Man, here in Atlanta, how you doing today, champ?
I'm doing great.
Man, I know. So we were talking just a second ago, and obviously you have such a rich history here in Atlanta. What's it like for you to see the biggest game in the world here in your city?
Well, it's exciting, but, you know, they're getting ready to play in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is one of the better stadiums. And
yeah, it's beautiful.
All the seats you can see. You would not miss none of the game if you pay attention. The game is it's a great facility.
Now, someone told me recently that your first job as a kid is you were selling Coca-Colas at the old stadium, right?
Yeah, at the Fort DeCounter Stadium. I wanted to play for the Falcons, and the thing is that I didn't have the money, so I took a job. So I've been there selling popcorn, peanuts, and ice cream.
That's not a bad first job, though. Not a bad one.
Well, it went bad, and then I got an opportunity to meet the players and carry it back to the car.
I feel like you would have been a pretty good football player.
I would have. But when I got into high school, my first time ever sitting on the bench, my mom wouldn't let me quit. She said, at the end of the season, you can make your mind up. So at the end of the season, they finally let me in. They seen how good I was. They asked me, was I going to come back? I said, no. They said, why? I said, my mama said, I don't have to come back. I like this. And I went into boxing. And boxing became the sport that I was known for.
Well, I think you probably a pretty good call. And Marcus here is our resident boxing expert.
No, I can't say expert, Mr.
Well, I know. Perhaps not expert. But at least for us, you have more experience than any of us.
Is boxing the ultimate cardio workout there is?
Yeah. It is the best. I mean, you got more people who would get in the game of boxing and not hurt themselves and know that it's a good workout. And they ain't really, you know, you just hit the bag. You hit the bag and you do all these things properly. It's a great workout, and you ain't got to really learn how to – you ain't got to take the chance of going in there fighting somebody. Just the workout itself will let you know that, do you really want to get chance yourself, cause you good – and somebody gonna hit you. You know, to hit me, I can hit you.
I don't want you to hit me.
That's what I'm saying. That's what boxing is. Yeah. At any time you can hit this guy, he can hit you.
So I gotta ask you, we've been obviously worked for the Raiders, and we're lucky enough we get to go to all these really cool events, and we've been to, you know, Super Bowls, NBA championships, you know, the highest, you know, the coolest, biggest events out there. But one thing that I have never done, and it's on my bucket list, I've never been to a big fight in Las Vegas. What is a fight night in Vegas like?
Well, it's about 2 or 3 Super Bowls all in one. Because you know, I'm talking. It's different because you know you sympathize somebody who you may want this guy to win, this other guy, he don't care nothing about that guy. So it's hard on family members. Because family member ain't used to hearing somebody say, "Kill him, kill him." but these are the things that said in the game of boxing, and you know. And so, you know, I had to tell my brothers and sisters, I said, look, well, y'all got to understand, they paid their money just like y'all. Y'all didn't pay no money, but they paid their money, you know, because I gave them their tickets. You know, so I give them their ticket, and they sit beside these people, and they get mad because somebody telling somebody to kill me. I told him, I said, it's a part of the game, man. You know, I said, it's the figure of speech.
You know, the Raiders are moving to Las Vegas. We're moving to Las Vegas next year, 2020. Is there something like, is there like a boxing event every week in Vegas?
Well, I don't know now. It used to be. I'm telling you, they had people boxing in the middle of the week. You had Monday night fights. You had Wednesday night fights. You had Friday and Saturday night fights. You know, I'm telling you, it's always something there. And because that's where the people, when people ultimately want to get loose, they go to Vegas.
Yeah.
Like that, so.
So the silver and black, I think it's, I'm glad we had you here because the Raiders haven't had a great, last year didn't go the way we wanted to. We kind of got punched in the mouth, to use a corny cliche.
Okay.
We got punched in the mouth. There's blood coming out. Yeah. My eyes a little swollen.
Yeah.
You know, you're balancing, you're wobbling a little bit. What does it take to come back, to punch back even harder, to return to greatness, to create a new reality, a new opportunity for yourself after getting punched in the mouth like that?
Well, it's just like, you remember that the slogan Rocky said, cut me, Mickey.
Yeah.
You know,
I can't see, man.
Yeah, he can't see. He said, cut me, Mickey. I'm telling you, he's willing to make a sacrifice to where he can see. Because he know if he couldn't see, he's going to get hit again.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm telling you, so, you know, with me in the line of life, you know, is payback pays the way for a comeback. So to me, that, you know, I'm telling you, you know, you fall sometimes. You just can't just give up. It ain't like saying, that's what I like about the sports in America. Every year, everybody start over zero again. And then you get to, each and every year, you get the chance to try again. As long as you keep trying, eventually you'll get it.
That's right. Couldn't say it better myself. Well, champ, we appreciate your time. This was so much fun for us. Thank you for stopping by, and we'll catch up with you soon. Thanks so much. Man, that was a lot of fun. That was low-key, like, really, really cool to talk to Evander Holyfield. If you would have told me 2 weeks ago, like, hey, you guys are going to sit down with the champ and talk Rocky, I would have been like, I don't know about that. But the beauty of the Super Bowl, the beauty of the ATL bringing people together, a beautiful thing in a beautiful place with beautiful people. The Super Bowl. That should be the new tagline for the NFL. Beautiful people in a beautiful place, something, something. Football's family. Anyways. So since we're back in the East Bay, back at 1220, we resurrect our usual, still unsponsored segment, Victory Formation. Eddie Pascal, producer Trav, and we welcome in a well-rested, a healthy, but a little angry today, junior draft analyst, senior esports correspondent, Southern California sports correspondent, the great Kyle Martin Media.
Eddie, hello.
How are you, KMM?
Well, you said it. I'm angry and I'm salty.
Let's get to that in a second. We will talk about your rage because there has been a lot today, a lot of rage. But we got to get into it because it's a fun time of year for you especially. We're getting into draft season, baby. We got the combine in, 3 weeks, which is pretty crazy to think about. But I know you're our resident mock draft guy. We put out our most recent edition. It was version 3 of the mock draft trapper.
Correct.
Hit me with your big takeaways.
There were a lot of surprises, to be honest. I mean, we've seen for weeks now that Quinnen Williams is a guy from defensive tackle from Alabama that's been linked to us quite a lot. But this past week, it was interesting. We saw Montez Sweat. I can't remember exactly which. I want to say CBS.
Mm.
Chris Trapasso, I think, had us taking Montez Sweat at 4th overall defensive end out of Mississippi State, which I thought was surprising considering since college football ended, he's been pegged as a late 15 to 20 first round guy, maybe 20 to 25. But it's crazy to think that his draft stock elevated so much.
Soared.
Yeah, just from his performance at the Senior Bowl and just what scouts were able to read from meeting him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, I mean, we've talked about a little bit 2 weeks ago when we were in Mobile, and I'm sure we'll talk about him a lot more in the coming weeks and months. But like you said, a dude who really had like a stellar week in Mobile, and obviously you go from being mocked out as a mid to late first round guy, and now you're having, this guy could be a top 5, top 10 dude. I mean, He's He's a good guy.
Another name, too, that stood out to me is actually Montez Sweat's teammate, Jeffrey Simmons.
Jeffrey with a interesting spelling of Jeffrey, correct?
It is. It is not your standard.
No Jeffrey. E in Jeffrey, right?
On the second
on
half.
On the second half, yeah.
But I was shocked to see him one so high because I was looking, again, you can't just judge a player based on his stats. But during his time at Mississippi State, the man failed to register more than 10 sacks combined over his three seasons there. Not to say that he's not a good player, but I mean, if one of our primary needs is the pass rush and this guy's not really getting it done at the college level in the pass rush, I think there's other people that you would target there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you and I are kind of in the same, we kind of come from the same school of evaluation in the sense of, if you're going to be, I don't want to paint with an incredibly broad brush, but I think it's fair to say 8 times out of 10, 9 times out of 10, if you're not producing at a really high level in college, it's probably fair to say you're going to have a challenge producing at a really high level in the NFL, in terms of statistically.
Sure, and it's just, I was just confused because it's the number 4 pick.
Yeah. You need a lock. You need a dog at number 4. Like, when you're at 4, you need a guy with no questions. You need a guy that shows up in June or July, whatever it is, puts the pads on a training camp, and he's a 16-game starter. Like, that's what you need it for.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And, I mean, at 4, and this is a defense-heavy draft, Josh Allen, Nick Bosa, and, I mean, who knows who the Jets take at 3, yeah. But there's plenty of guys that the Raiders could pick at 4 that I'm not – again, watch Jeffrey Simmons be a baller.
Yeah, and then we'll look foolish.
Yeah, of course. But I just – right now, based on resumes, athletic gifts, I think there's other players that – like Rashawn Gary, who we've also been linked to.
We've been high on Gary. I know you like Gary a lot. I like Gary.
I do too. I also like Devin Bush, mm-hmm. linebacker.
But another Michigan guy, right?
Correct. He's also been linked to us later in the round, 24 and 27, in a couple different mock drafts.
If you're getting Gary at 24, I mean, that's what we call a value pick there, brother.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, we just call us the Michigan Wolverines, dude.
Yeah, we have Big Mo, Rashawn. Yeah, it's a lot
Bush,
of
Devin yeah. Bush. Shoot. All ballers.
No, I'm I mean, look, it's going to be fun to kind of slice and dice this thing up over the next couple months, and I'm sure next week will be a different mock draft recap, and especially once we get to the combine and everything kind of works itself out there, things will change dramatically. But I'm with you. I like guys. We've talked about before kind of what we value in prospects coming out, and I think, you know, I value production a lot. And I know that there's always going to be those guys who, for whatever reason, it doesn't click for them in college. You know, maybe it's a coaching change, a scheme change. You know, they're a little hurt here and there. Like, I get it. Things happen, but you know, I think it's important, you know, especially when we were talking about a top 5 guy, obviously the Raiders at number 4, and you know, we haven't even gotten into the conversation of, okay, with 3 first round draft picks, do we stay at 4? Do we move up? Do we move back? I mean, there are literally countless different scenarios of how this thing is going to play out on draft weekend, but hypothetically you stay at 4, you know, with the needs that this team has and what this team kind of showed, and I think it's important to say, the cupboard is not bare, right? I mean, I think it's really easy at this point in the year to be like, the Raiders need A, B, C, D, E, and F. You know, we need all these things. And yes, this team definitely needs some help. Like, you know, Mike Mayock said it, Coach Gruden has said it. Like, this team is not, you know, not where they want to be. But the cupboards are not bare.
No.
That said, at 4, you need a dog.
Yeah, you gotta get an impact player from the gate. Jump out of the gate with someone that's going to impress not only the coaching staff, but his teammates and the fans,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, let's call a spade here, to use a term that LeBron's pretty fond of using at the moment. But at 4, like, you need to get someone that gets the people going.
No
you
doubt.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
That's the why all those picks are so highly coveted.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, like, you obviously never make picks to appease a fan base. Like, it's the dumbest thing you can do. Like, Coach Gruden and Mike Mayock are not going to do that. But you got to get the people going at 4, brother. You have to. You have to get, like, and this, you know, I'm the biggest special teams advocate in this building behind perhaps Richard Bisaccia. But you're not taking a punter at 4. You know what I mean?
No.
You're not taking a long snapper at 4. You're getting
no.
an impact guy, a guy who gets to the quarterback, protects the quarterback, or scores touchdowns in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that you no disrespect to any of the players on our defense last year, they played well.
Yeah.
For the most part in the second half of the season.
Yeah. I mean, that last, I mean, there was that month stretch there, probably around what, week 11 to week 14, somewhere around there, where that defense was doing exactly what they needed to do. And you saw kind of the jumps from what you had hoped to see, you know, from week one to the second half of the season.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, they gave it their all. And no, it could be the Bears, it could be the Jets, it could be any team that has a solid defense, but if you can get an impact player, they're only going to benefit the group. And there's plenty of those that we can select. So the last mock draft had some curveballs, but for the most part, Quinnen Williams remains a high target, as well as Rashawn Gary.
Most of them go in defense. I know that I kind of let you take the lead on most of that draft stuff, but the experts, quote-unquote experts, are leaning pretty defensive-heavy at number four.
Yeah, I have yet to see one mock draft that has us going offense with the fourth pick.
Let me ask you this. I'll put you on the spot a little bit. Who's the best? I know we've talked defense. Who's the best offensive player, do you think, in this draft?
Oh, you gotta think quarterback, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of those. Skill position, I really like his last name's blanking me right now, but I think his name's Arte. The guy, N'Keal Harry. I don't know why I'm saying Arte.
Yes.
N'Keal Harry out of ASU.
Yeah, he's a beast. And we saw a little bit of him, Pac-12 guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple other offensive players that we, again, all later first
guys,
like 27th pick.
Yeah.
Josh Jacobs, running back out of Alabama. Debo Samuel, wide receiver out of South Carolina. He was at the Senior Bowl, had a strong performance during practice.
I mean, it really does seem like it's going to be, like you said, it's a defense-heavy draft, and I think what's going to throw a whole wrench into this, I don't even say a wrench, but it'll be interesting to see who the first offensive guy taken off the board is, because when you're looking at the top five, which we've done a lot the past couple weeks, it's defense, maybe a quarterback, defense. So it'll be interesting to see who kind of starts that offensive domino trickle effect, where at whatever point in the top 10 or whatever it is.
Definitely. I'm a big I really like what Dane Brugler does.
Yeah. Yeah. Big Brugler guy. Shout out to Brugler.
I think he's got a really good analysis of a lot of players. And he said the other day that don't be surprised if there's a trade up in the top five for a quarterback. Because if you look at drafts from years past, recently, there's been a lot of teams that Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah. Don't call him Mitch.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield. Like all Browns didn't trade up to get him. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of quarterbacks that go in the first five picks.
Yeah.
And if you have the Giants just outside the top five, you've got the Broncos just outside the top five, who's to say that they're not going to make that move up? Because, I mean, those are both quarterback-needy teams.
Yeah, both teams that need quarterbacks. And, oh, boy. I mean, there is no more scrutinized, discussed, whatever adjective you want to use in all of sports than quarterback.
No, not at all.
Right? I mean, we could literally just do pods just talking about the quarter. I mean, it's like these quarterbacks are under such, everything they do is analyzed to the umpth degree. And so, I don't know, it's going to be interesting. I'm excited to, obviously we're lucky, we're fortunate to be in the position where we don't need a quarterback. So it's kind of fun to sit back and look and be like, oh, okay, let's see how these things are gonna play out.
Absolutely. The draft is hit or miss, man. You never know what's going to happen. Anything can change at the drop of a hat, and we'll see.
It's going to be a fun weekend. But before that weekend, got to go to the combine. So we just got home, but the show is going on the road again in a couple of weeks. So we'll be back for a little bit, but we will be in Indy for the combine per usual. And actually today, Kyle, the combine list came out. I think the only really notable, I don't want to say the only notable, but the thing everyone's talking about, Kyler Murray will be at the combine.
Yeah.
Will he throw? Will he do all that? TBD. But I don't know. Interesting that old Kyler's going to be in the house.
Yeah, he's definitely going to continue to be the headlined prospect with his athletic abilities and the baseball, the football. I mean, he's just the best story.
Yeah, I would agree.
In the draft right now, so who knows what he'll do.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's crazy to think about? That we haven't really gone down the rabbit hole too deeply. There's a chance this dude doesn't even play football. Like, there is a chance that he goes to the combine, he does, you know, he goes through the pro day, he does the whole process, and then he decides, you know what? I'm going to go play baseball.
It could.
Could you imagine what that would do to the first round?
No, I mean, there's no predicting with this guy.
It's madness!
It could be chaotic. It could definitely be chaotic. I told you earlier this week that I have a buddy who's in the minor leagues for the Tampa Bay Rays,
And who shall remain nameless.
Who shall remain nameless.
Source Kyle.
All him, like him and all of his teammates have discussed Kyler Murray, and they all agree that, one, the demands that he's making have never been made in baseball before. And he's creating a sour taste in the mouths of baseball GMs, and he's setting a bad precedent because, that again, he knows the system, he knows the agents, he knows all things that go through the inner workings of a draft, right? And he just doesn't see Kyler Murray playing baseball. He doesn't see it. Who knows? Again, it's not like my buddy knows Kyler Murray personally. He doesn't know these NFL GMs or the MLB GMs personally, but...
Dude, it's interesting, though. I mean, there are literally 1,000 different ways that you could slice this.
100%.
Literally 1,000. He could do the baseball route. He could do the football route. He could do, hey, I want to play football for these 7 teams. Or I mean, it's immensely fascinating. It really is, and it's going to be a pretty crazy couple months here, no doubt about it.
You think about the power that he has, too. Just last comment. You think about the power that he has in the NFL draft, because if any team wants to pick him, he could simply just say, I'm going to play baseball.
Yeah, I'm going
to
play baseball. They
won't, he essentially gets to choose who he wants to go to.
In a sense, right? Because he could be like, hey, I want to play for, and I'm just throwing this out there, hey, I want to go play for the Patriots, but, you know, there's a chance that Belichick's like, well,
I don't want him.
I don't want you. Exactly, yeah. You know? So, I mean, he does control his own destiny a little bit, more than a little bit. He controls his own destiny at a pretty good clip, but it's not like he has full autonomy to be like, hey, Carolina Panthers, like, I want to be your starting. You know what I mean?
No, for sure. You have to be like, all right, well, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to draft you at 6. Well, I'm going to go play baseball.
Exactly.
And then the Giants pick him, and he's like, oh, well, you know what? I'd be down to play for the Giants.
Yeah. It really is fascinating. I don't know if we've had a story that's kind of this topsy-turvy with as many branches and tangents as the old Kyler Murray situation. And, I mean, probably as long as I can remember, shoot.
Yeah. Your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah. Exciting. Exciting stuff. We'll have a lot to talk about, no doubt about that. But, Kyle, I don't want to do this to you, but I know you're angry.
But you're gonna.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it. You're angry. You're upset. What's going on?
The Lakers are in shambles, dude. It's a dumpster fire.
Kyle, our resident Southern California expert on all things sports, e-commerce, tourism, local politics. But for those of you who just, I don't know why you'd listen to this podcast and not know what's going on in the world of sports, but in case you're the 7 people who that applies to, big offer on the table for old Anthony Davis by the Lake Show, and AD ain't going anywhere, baby, is he?
No, he's not for the time being, but this isn't my issue. My issue isn't that Anthony Davis isn't a Laker. That's not my problem. Do I want him to be a Laker? Did I want to see the trade get completed? Of course I did.
Would you guys have fielded a 2-man team of LeBron and Anthony Davis? Because there's no one else left on that roster.
I'd go play point if they asked me to, and we'd win, all right? But the thing that upsets me the most is that Dell Demps, no chance he ever hears this podcast, but Kyle Martin wants you to know, Dell Demps, that what you did is Bush League and unprofessional.
Just shouting out Dell Demps. Dell, if you want to hop on the pod to respond, our line is always open. Get at Kyle, get at me, get at producer Trav on Twitter. The floor is yours, my friend. So, Dell, whenever you want to join us, just holler.
I just don't. Okay, I get that. If you had no intention of trading Anthony Davis, that's fine. You want to field, trade rumors for, you field offers for what's on the table. I get that. But if your sole intention, tell me one time this has ever been done in the history of sports, all sports. If you field an offer with the intention to simply leak information to ruin the chemistry of a team, tell me that's not ridiculous. The way that he went about it, it's like, I'm going to make sure that I'm going to use his desperation, Magic Johnson, to get the most insane trade offers from him, where he's literally going to contemplate trading his whole team, and then I'm going to leak every single trade he sends me to ruin everything that they've got going on.
Or is that just kind of a master in strategery?
Is it, though? Or is it Bush League and unprofessional? Because when has that ever been done in sports before?
Well, I mean, I'm sure, look, we all know, like, leaking trades and all that kind of stuff happens, but...
Sure, but no one's ever been, at least, been like, you know what, this was wholeheartedly my intent. It's not, like, a theory that somebody came up with. This is a fact that I did this to maliciously attack and dismantle the Lakers from the inside out.
Once again, Dell Demps, we're calling on you. Feel free to call in, to hit us up, and we'll get you on the pod to rebuttal Kyle. But, dude, it's a trip, man. Honestly, and I'm a big – I tell you all the time, I'm a big Warriors fan before the dynasty. But my knowledge of the league, or the association, if you will, like I tell you all the time, like I know – I feel like I'm pretty good and like locked in on what the Warriors are doing. Not like sourced or anything, but like I'm a fan. So I know what, like what's going on with them, but like – I don't know much of anything else going outside the Warriors. So it's been fun to see you and Walks break down, mostly you, over the past 36 hours about this.
It's torn me apart, Eddie. It's torn me apart, much like it's torn apart the Lakers locker room. And how do we respond to that? By trading Michael Beasley and Ivica Zubats to the Clippers for Mike Muscala.
I know one person in that trade.
Unreal. And watch, we did that move, as if I'm a part of the organization. The Lakers made that move to clear a roster spot, which, guess who we're probably going to sign? Carmelo Anthony.
Mellow.
Hasn't been able to play consistently at a high level for about 4 years now.
Looking thick, though. Looking thick.
I used to love Mello, but
when you were
I don't want to stay
probably,
Mello.
Yeah. Oh, boy. What a world. What a world it is.
That's my beef for the day.
Yeah, one more time, just Dell Demps, that's the general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans. Dell, feel free to reach out to us. Our phone lines are literally always open. So
Dell, I'm not gonna attack you by any means. I just want an explanation, man. I just wanna know why you gotta do that. Huh? Why'd you have to just go and personally attack the Lakers and their young core?
Hopefully we'll find out next week when Dell Demps joins us on Upon Further View. Well, hey, I do want to give a special shout out to a new fan, a guy who hit us up today, loves the program, really a fan of like all of our digital work on Raiders.com. And we love that kind of stuff. Like, we love hearing you guys reach out to us, share your thoughts, share your feelings. We encourage it. So, Mr. Dangerously, thank you so much for the kind words. Thank you so much. We have another shout out. Producer Trav is in my ear right now. The great David White, our friend from Down Under. Dave from Wallen. Wallen, I think that's the correct pronunciation. So, Dave, I'm sorry if we butchered that. But, Dave, we love you. We appreciate you. And, Mr. Dangerously, we love you and appreciate you as well. So, for Eddie Pascal, for Kyle Martin, Producer Trav, Engineer Jim, James Jones, and the champ, Evander Holyfield, this has been another episode of Upon Further Review, and we will catch you guys next week.
Thank you for listening to Upon Further Review on the official Raiders Podcast Network.